Okay, good morning or good afternoon, wherever you may happen to be. This is Joel Whitaker, the editor of Cane's Beverage News Daily, for the first of what we hope will be a series of Tuesday topics where we will talk with leading people in the alcohol beverage industry about their business and how they've grown and done well and how our listeners might do the same thing. Today we have a very special guest, Larry Del Papa, the president of Del Papa Distributing in Galveston, Texas, and two other locations down in southeastern Texas, whose firm has just celebrated a 100th anniversary, which is quite a milestone. Very few firms make it to the second generation, much less getting to the first 100 years. And so the relevance of today's call for you all is we want to explore how the business evolved, how it met the challenges of various things. In particular, I'm always curious how firms survived Prohibition, how they became an Anheuser-Busch wholesaler, how they prepare the next generation of leadership for the firm, and how they make things right, if you will, for those family members who either don't want to go into the business or who are chosen not to go into the business. So, Larry, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Joel. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thank you very much for joining us today. So tell me a little bit about the business. How did you all get started way back 100 years ago?
Well, way back when, 1910, we started as a wholesale grocery business, as our history reports. My grandfather, Omero Del Papa Sr., had come to this country, had immigrated as a young man in the 1890s, and his first business was a wholesale grocery firm in 1910, and so we trace our roots back to that point.
Very good. Do you by any chance happen to know what led him into the wholesale business at all?
No, you know, I think it was pretty common back then. You know, I think immigrants and maybe more so Italian immigrants in this area, you know, they kind of set up and sold kind of the goods they were familiar with back home. So, you know, cheeses and wines and Italian specialty grocery items is my understanding of kind of what the business was at that point. And they would actually, I guess, go out and deliver those to, you know, other firms in town, restaurants and whatnot.
Sure. Now, had you all become a beer wholesaler by the time Prohibition came along, or did you, that would have been only 8 years later, so I'm sort of presuming you missed that great opportunity to stumble.
You know, I understand, and we had some research done for our 100th year, that, you know, there were some alcoholic beverage products involved, wine. I don't believe there were any beers, but there was wine, you know, back when it was a wholesale grocery before Prohibition.
Sure. But
it was not a large part of the business. Of course, it wasn't a large business at all.
Right. And I was going to say, I guess that at that time, and you just answered it, the business was still primarily a wholesale grocery business, and the wine was just another item along with the cheeses and whatever. So it hurt, but maybe not very much.
Correct.
So how did you all end up getting hooked up with Anheuser-Busch?
Well, as part of his business, he had some Anheuser-Busch products during Prohibition, such as yeast, malt nutrient, I believe a product called Bevo, which was a non-alcohol. And so there was a very minor association involved. I'm not sure to what extent that had anything to do with us becoming a wholesaler, but in 1930, Anheuser-Busch's records indicate we became their distributor. Now, that was during Prohibition, so we weren't selling beer, but I imagine in anticipation of repeal, Anheuser-Busch must have been going around the country and setting up their network of distributors so that upon repeal they would have a distribution network. Kind of interesting that, you know, we go back to 1930, but I believe, you know, other wholesalers kind of date their association with Anheuser-Busch pre-repeal during Prohibition.
Do you happen to know whether grandfather, great-grandfather, when he hooked up with Anheuser-Busch, whether he was a genius and could see what was coming, or was he just lucky, or does your family archives indicate any of that?
No, I mean, it was my grandfather, and, you know, I never knew him because he died when I was very young. but people I've come across, you know, in business that knew him, you know, when I was younger, would talk about what a visionary he was. I don't think he could have envisioned the beer business or his association with Anheuser-Busch at that time leading us to where we are today. But I understand, you know, it was a personal interview that took place back in 1930, and I would imagine, you know, he was just trying to supplement his business with another product line. It wasn't until a much later date that he focused exclusively on beer and alcohol, wine, I guess, at the time when his two oldest sons were in the war.
Right. And Galveston, I would assume, back in 1930, was really a pretty small town, wasn't it? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, Galveston was considered Wall Street of the South, you know, prior to the Great Depression. And, you know, a number of things affected Galveston, the 1900 storm certainly. But Galveston was pretty much a center of commerce because it had a natural deep water port. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, back in the early 1900s, and probably late 1800s, it was pretty much the hub of commercial business.
Good. So he really selected a great location, I guess, in wholesaling, like other things, like real estate in general. It's location, 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 to some extent.
Yeah, and we certainly like being on the Gulf Coast of Texas right now.
I bet you do. It's maybe you don't with the oil spill. How is the oil spill affecting you at this point?
It didn't affect us directly, although you know, we were kind of surprised with an obvious downturn in midsummer. It was. While we didn't have any oil on our beaches and our fisheries were open, obviously, you know, we're all kind of connected to the oil industry. We found that out in the 80s when we had the recession back then. So, you know, I observed a lot of fishing fleets that were docked, you know, that obviously, you know, the long-distance fishing fleets. And then you just look at the ripple effect that, you know, shutting down the Gulf has on all of us that depend on the Gulf Coast. It impacted us, but not nearly to the extent that our peers in Louisiana got impacted.
Has your economy pretty well recovered at this point down there?
We're seeing signs of that. Unemployment is still high, you know, part of our territory is still recovering from Hurricane Ike, not so much from a tourism standpoint, but from the loss of small businesses and jobs. So, you know, it's hard to measure, you know, what's impacting us more, the Hurricane Ike recovery or, you know, the broader economic issues in the U.S. and in Texas.
Right. Well, Hurricane Ike and then the oil spill certainly indicate that in business you never have a very long of completely smooth sailing. How does your family prepare the next generation for leadership? And I guess what I'm really asking is, do you know how your grandfather prepared your dad and then how your dad prepared? Obviously, you know your experience, and I'm assuming you have children perhaps coming into the business, and how are you preparing them?
Well, yeah, I believe as far as my grandfather with his sons, you know, I think it was just kind of the norm back then. If you had a family business, you went into it. Probably not a lot of questions asked, and you know, there wasn't that many people going off to college and getting educated in other arenas, so I believe it was pretty natural back then for my dad and his brothers just to gravitate to the family business. In my case, you know, I started working when I was young and just always liked hanging around the business and was exposed to it, conversations at the dinner table, and I never considered doing anything else. I guess also, fortunately, although there were other family members involved, you know, my uncle's children, they never really took interest in, you know, got rooted in the business the way I did. So here I am, third generation. I'm the only family member directly involved in the business. I do have a sister who, you know, has some financial interest in the business, but I'm third generation, and I'm the only one. So that's a very fortunate position to be in. I do have two children. Neither of them yet indicate any desire to go into the business. My son is still young. He's 15. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that one of them will, take an interest, but it's nothing that I'm pressuring them to do. I mean, I certainly would love them to continue this great family business, but if it's not in their desire, or they want to venture out and do something different, I certainly want them to be happy and have a passion for whatever they do. But I also know from some of my peers that some of their children, come in a little bit later in life after they get their education and go out and kind of test the world. And I certainly think that's a healthy thing. I would not discourage my children from doing that. It probably helps them get a better education too if they know they have to depend on that education as opposed to the family business. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed that one or both of them would like to continue this great story.
Good. Well, I certainly know that among the academics who focus on family business management and succession and growth and all that sort of thing, many of them do believe that it's really helpful for the kids to go off and work in another firm, whether it's in the same line of trade or something entirely different for a while to, prove to themselves that they can do what they want to do and they're really capable. And I sure appreciate your viewpoint on that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, as you say, I think that's particularly helpful today as, our businesses have matured and become more sophisticated. I do think them getting an education and getting some outside orientation so that we don't continue to do things the way we've always done them just because we've always done them that way and we've been successful. On the other hand, I feel like I had a great advantage kind of growing up in the business and being focused on the business and probably absorbed a lot more than I would have as a casual observer. So, I think both work, but I think in today's world, the way sophistication and everything that affects us has evolved, I do believe that, the next generation is better served by going out there and learning something beyond the business and see what other companies are doing that might be applied. Because we need new ideas to fuel growth.
That's absolutely true. Your fellow wholesaler and NBWA president predecessor by, I guess, about 2 years, Betty Buck, likes to talk about how when she was a kid, she used to drive the forklifts around the warehouse on Saturdays. Do you all do that sort of thing? Do your kids come to the warehouse? And if so, do they play with the forklifts, for lack of a better term?
My kids haven't had the interest to even kind of to be around to that degree. My son, when he was younger, much younger, and would come to the office with me on a weekend, he would certainly be interested in those kind of things. Also, as we've evolved and gotten more sophisticated, it's not a good idea to have kids running around on forklifts in the warehouse. From a liability standpoint, I guess that's one of the areas that we've kind of digressed as businesses. We frown upon those kind of risks.
I've never asked Betty if her kids or her grandkids have done that. So it's a very good point. And I suppose I should ask Betty sometime. She's just down the road from us here in Maryland. So.
But that's the way I grew up, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
You mean riding the forklifts and all that?
Riding the forklifts, driving the trucks, on the property. But I was driving a truck before I was driving a car.
Oh, really? Very good. So let's talk a little bit about estate planning, which is going to sort of be an interesting topic because your kids are so young. In the normal course of events, maybe you might be passing along ownership or something, but I wonder if your son is 15, are you doing any of that sort of thing, or is that something that gets put off for another 5, 10, 15 years?
No, we're doing some of it. My daughter's 18. It's interesting for us because my dad is still involved with the business. I mean, he's not day-to-day, but he comes every day, so he's 82, and we've been focused so much on the last 20 years trying to work on his estate that all of a sudden, you realize that, I'm 55 and it's time to start doing the same for my children. But it's hard to plan the next generation until you have one generation kind of organized from an estate standpoint. So, yeah, we are doing a lot of that. The uncertainty that we face right now certainly makes it difficult to plan you know, whether a state or business.
Yeah.
But, I know just talking to my peers in family businesses, I mean, estate planning is a huge effort for those of us that are mindful of that. Unfortunately, you know, I think up until recently, a lot of family businesses, you know, were not as involved in estate planning as they needed to be. The concept that you have to plan to pass your business to your children so they can keep a business thriving is, you know, one of those things that, you know, makes me scratch my head. I mean, you would think that there would be encouragement to do that, but you've almost got to plan against the odds to make that a reality.
Right. So what are your peers, or what are you all doing? Gifting? I guess that's what you would do at this stage for yourself at any rate. No point in selling it to them, to your kids, because they don't have the money to buy a position of the business, I would guess.
Yeah, well, I'm a little, it's a little early for me to know exactly what direction it'll unfold with my children, but, I know my dad did a lot of gifting, when I was very young. Me and my sister were very young, and of course the business was not worth a whole lot back then, so that helped a lot in terms of, where my generation stands. The next generation is much more challenging because, you know, the business is certainly viable. There'll be a large estate, and there's still the uncertainty of whether they're going to be involved in the business or not.
Right.
And so those are all challenges for me personally to deal with and figure out, you know, what's the best course.
I bet you got a couple of life insurance agents that think they're your best friends.
Well, you know, life insurance policies have been part of the plan historically. We're trying to learn what's the best way going forward. So we are trying to bring in some expertise and give consideration to, you know, the myriad of things you can do. So that's kind of where we are. I think estate planning is, you know, it's a moving target, and it's a never-ending effort. You never kind of put the plan away and say, okay, we're done. Because, you know, we don't even know, here we are in November, we don't even know what the game is in a couple months.
Right. And that certainly would make it more difficult and more challenging, no doubt about that. I don't want to stir up a family fight or anything like that, but I have a question for you. In some family businesses I know, what they do is they take, and the person who's involved in the business gets all the stock in the business, and then the any siblings, like your sister, for instance, who are not involved in the business on a day-to-day basis, they get other assets, and the two sort of balance out, so at least at the point when the estate is split, everybody feels like they've had the same thing. Is that a philosophy that you think is a wise one, or do you think that, or do you think there are other ways to deal with it, or have you thought about that?
Well, I mean, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm blessed. There's not a lot of family members involved, even though we're third generation. There certainly could have been. So, you know, it's really not a big issue for us. I do think a key is that, you know, an active and involved member, you know, needs to have control so they can get things done. You know, I've reflected over the years on the things that I've been able to do that, you know, had there been, split votes and I didn't have the authority to do it, we wouldn't have been able to do it, and we probably wouldn't even be here right now. Certainly if we were, we wouldn't be as viable. So I do think that, you need to have, an involved manager or management team in charge that has the authority to move the business forward. I've heard some horror stories, as I'm sure you have, and I'm just very grateful that none of that's taken place here.
Well, and that is truly something to be grateful for.
You know, even to the extent that, you know, my dad, allowed me to move the business forward, even though he didn't agree with many or maybe most of the things I wanted to do. I think he recognized that it was my future more than his that I was attempting to affect. And fortunately, he gave me the latitude to make those kind of decisions. And, I know others in my situation, you know, at my age, that still don't have that latitude. And I believe their businesses suffer because of it.
And I've talked to a couple of wholesalers over the years who've had awful battles with their dad. You know, where in one case, I know a Chicago area wholesaler, a wine and spirits guy, not a, a beer guy, but still a wholesaler, told me that he actually had a toe-to-toe confrontation where he ended up telling his dad that either his dad was getting out of the business or he was getting out of the business, but they had to decide within the next 24 hours. And he said they eventually made up, but I'm sure that must have been an awful experience too. So I think you're truly, truly blessed to have avoided that sort of experience.
I certainly am.
You all have celebrated your 100th anniversary in the last, well, the last year, and you had a big Fandango a couple of weeks ago to wrap everything up. Tell us about your 100th anniversary celebration, which it seemed to me that you guys really planned it and orchestrated it to make sure that people in the communities that you serve were aware of your business, aware of how long you've been in business, and all that sort of thing. So perhaps you could tell us about your, in some detail, about your 100th anniversary. What were the goals as you sat down when you realized you were going to be able to observe this thing? What goals did you have in mind?
Well, you know, the main goal was we just didn't let it slip by without appropriate recognition of the unique milestone. I think the way a lot of us looked at it was that, you know, we got lucky. We were the ones that got to celebrate it. Others before us are the ones that made it happen. So, you know, we wanted to pay appropriate tribute to what truly is a unique milestone. But I'll also point out that, you know, in our industry, it's not that uncommon to have old multi-generational businesses that are still very viable. So I do think that's one thing that's unique to, you know, the beer industry and our types of businesses. But, you know, we're also very fortunate. Mike McAfee, who's our Vice President of Consumer Marketing, reports to Alex Gidrow, our Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing, who I believe is on the call. About 2 years ago, he put together a committee and began giving consideration to, you know, what's the appropriate way to celebrate 100 years. And Mike is a very creative guy. You know, we've been putting on, you know, kind of annual conventions for our company, and so you know, some of the elements were in place, but he also recognized this needed to be a big damn deal, and you know, included our PR agency, Elmore, and started off the year, you know, after a couple years of planning with breakfasts in January, one in each of our locations, which was more of a, kind of like an announcement and an event for the media, just to kind of tee up what was about to take place. At those breakfasts, we announced that we would endow scholarships at all of the colleges throughout our 17 counties, community colleges and universities, and there was, I believe, 13 of those. So that, you know, got a lot of press. It was also a great give back to the community that, you know, we didn't feel like anybody could really be upset about, because you got to be real careful who you give to, because the others that don't receive are feeling like they got left out. But we had nothing but positive feedback from, you know, in giving those scholarships, because, you know, who can argue with the value of educating our youth and supporting community colleges? So that was pretty big. And then we had a pretty broad mailing of a couple historical brochures, if you will. One for the first 50 years that got sent out in the spring, another for the second 50 years that got sent out towards the end of the summer, and those were very well received, and you know, a lot of good history involved in those. Also, the committee brought in a fellow named Ron Stone Jr. his dad was a well-known newscaster in Houston for, you know, years and years, decades. And eventually kind of went into private service. And Ron Jr. has kind of followed in his footsteps and focused on kind of historical documentation, films, articles, what have you. So he's kind of a historian, and he was really perfect to help us, you know, dive deeper into our history, make sure the stories we were telling were accurate, and bring a whole lot more information to us. And he's really researched reams of data that's eventually going to be put into a history book that we're going to release after this year. We wanted all of this year's activities to be included in that history book. So next spring there'll be a very nice hardbound history book that'll be developed that'll chronicle the first 100 years of our company. And within that effort will also be a video that, you know, to the extent that we have historical video, but more recently, you know, the video that's taken place during our 100th year. So it should be a nice wrap-up and leave something behind that will serve as a good, you know, orientation and education and, you know, heirloom for those who come next.
Sure.
And so really, you really got to give, you know, all the credit to Mike McAfee and the team he put together. They just did an incredible job. And then in the last month or so, we've had a gala at each of our locations, one in Victoria, one in Beaumont, both of those at our facilities, and then the biggest event here in Galveston, which was bigger than our facility could handle. It was done at the Lone Star Flight Museum, which turned out to be a pretty interesting venue for a 100-year celebration because they've got, you know, a lot of old vintage planes, one of the nicer flight museums in the country, and had the Clydesdales at each of our locations and entertainment. It was a great celebration and truly met the mark of what we wanted to do, and that's not let this moment pass without celebration.
I bet it was just an absolutely wonderful series of parties that people will be talking about for a very long time.
Well, we hope so. Certainly had a lot of talk value.
Good. And not as part of your celebration, but as a happy coincidence, not only are you observing your 100th anniversary for the firm, but you yourself are the president of the National Beer Wholesalers Association.
Yes, actually, I'm chairman.
I
like to point out that the chairman is a volunteer position, the president is a paid position, and I did not get the presidency.
You probably, I wouldn't be surprised if you thought you should be paid after the amount of work you're going to put in this year. Who's running the store back in Galveston while you're taking care of NBWA?
Well, I have a great team, and that's one of the reasons that I have the latitude and the privilege to serve is Alex, who I've already mentioned, our executive vice president of sales and marketing, who manages that arm of our business, and of course he's got a great team, people like Mike McAfee, who I already mentioned, and others that are, you know, similarly qualified, and then Bill Falkenhagen, who's our executive vice president and chief financial officer, runs all the operations side of our business, and you know, truly day to day, I probably just get in their way. Hopefully they need me for strategic direction and oversight and for what I could add, but you know, any business like ours gets run by the people in the business. We're fooling ourselves if we think we run them. When we try, we really just get in the way. So I think they would probably tell you they're glad I'm off doing something else, staying strategic instead of getting into the tactical weeds.
I am absolutely willing to bet that they will not say that on this call.
Probably not on. It probably won't go on record, but I know I'm well enough to know what they're thinking, and I'm fine with that.
That's good. It reminds me of the story about George Steinbrenner, you know, the owner of the New York Yankees, who died recently. And in the early years of his ownership, he was just immense in every aspect of the business. And then he got himself into some trouble and was basically told by the Major League Baseball people that he could not be involved with the Yankees in any way, shape, or form. And after 4, 5, 6 years, I forget how long it was, he was allowed to come back. But he had noticed during that period when he had not been involved at all that the team actually did pretty well. As a matter of fact, he said they did a lot better than when he was replacing the manager every 6 months. And after that, he said that, you know, his goal was to let the baseball people take care of baseball, and he took care of the other things like building Yankee Stadium and that sort of thing. And, you know, the Yankees seem to do very well, so, if it's any encouragement, you have, the example of Steinbrenner, who also was, as you probably know, a Gulf Coast guy. He really lived down in Tampa more than he lived in New York.
Well, I mean, I think that's the way it's got to be. If you've got people that you're paying to lead, you need to let them lead. If they're being paid to manage, they need to manage. And if they're being paid to execute, you need to let them execute. They know a lot more about their job than you do, and I think it also helps keep everybody focused on the bigger picture. If the if the top guy, you know, gets too far down in the weeds, he's not looking out for where we're going. So hopefully I'm able to see the future better than they can.
Good. Now, you've been in the president's chair the chairman's chair. I do that repeatedly, and I'm sorry about that.
It's common. Everybody does it, makes the same mistake.
I'm going to apologize to you, and I'm going to apologize to my friend Craig Purser. I've done this repeatedly, and I'm really sorry about it.
Yeah, he's the president, and he's certainly qualified. I'm not.
Well, he's a terrific association executive, no doubt about that. But you've been in that chair for, what, about 3 months now, I guess?
50 days.
50 days, less than 2 months then. How are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it a lot. It's certainly a lot of work, but it's work that I'm happy to do. I'm privileged to do. I get to meet a lot of good folks. I'm more plugged into broader strategic issues for our industry than I would be otherwise. And so it's a challenge, but that's what a lot of us thrive on. And I'm getting one hell of an education. Just being able to work closer with Craig and his staff, and really get more in depth in the understanding of our industry issues and what affects us and how we improve the industry long term. It's all very interesting, and I'm learning a whole lot more about a business that I thought I understood a lot. And that's kind of one lesson that I've learned, as far as communicating with our members. We've got a lot of good distributors who certainly understand their business, but understanding the politics of our business and the long-term direction for a healthy industry and where our role needs to be in terms of what's in the public's interest, that's all very educational. It's something that we need to be sure everybody understands what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Now, what do you see as the major issues that NBWA is going to be dealing with during your year as president? As chairman, there I go again.
Well, our strategic plan is kind of what drives the organization, and one of our big strategies is to advocate for our distributor members, and in that regard, there's federal legislation we've been working on. And then there's, always emerging issues that, the uncertainty is what we're trying to understand. But recently you had the Washington State Initiative. We didn't know we'd be dealing with that up until the point we had to deal with it. More recently we had the caffeinated alcohol beverage issue, which, affected a lot of our members and the industry at large. So we've got to be somewhat nimble in being able to be ready and be prepared to assist and be involved in whatever issue is warranted. But our main focus is on our long-term strategic plan, which is driven by membership feedback. What their concerns are and what we can do as an association to provide value to our members.
I would assume that one piece of feedback you're getting right now is every one of your members must be going absolutely nuts trying to figure out, what the tax situation is going to be next year. It's so critical as you try to plan your budgeting and everything else, how you'll buy your equipment and on and on and on. And I would assume that you're hearing about that every day, and I assume you're also talking to Craig about that every day, saying we really need to try to get some resolution, which is something that, of course, you really don't have power over.
Yeah, well, NBWA is on record as, supporting a meaningful and permanent solution. We love full repeal of the estate tax, but we recognize, in this current economic environment, that's not very likely. But, we do need something meaningful, and we need something permanent that business people can plan for. I understood at our meeting last week, I guess I'm accurate in saying that normally this time of year the IRS is sending out tax forms, and those haven't even been sent out because they don't even know the answer.
Yeah.
Here we are, almost December, and we still don't know what rules we're going to be operating under come January.
Did you hear any talk about whether they thought that that would get resolved before the turn of the year, or did the NBWA staff sort of indicate that they had no idea how that would resolve itself outright?
Well, you know, I believe most people, and I've talked to my own, tax attorneys and CPAs, and most people think, there's going to be an extension of where we are right now. I'm kind of personally planning on that being the case, but the fact is we truly don't know, and even if they're extended, we don't know, how long is that extension. So it's really a bad position for business to be in, and it doesn't help this country solve the jobless issue when businesses can't plan.
Right. And just out of curiosity, the president's deficit commission came out with, or at least the leaders of the deficit commission came out with some recommendations, which basically were cut a lot of spending and raise taxes. What's your own feeling on that?
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
I mean, if you raise taxes to the people that are creating the jobs, then you're disincenting the very people and businesses that are part of the solution, not the problem.
Sure.
But that's just my personal view based on experience.
Right. Well, sir, I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. What other issues are of concern at the moment? Anything dealing with the transportation side of the business? It used to be that you all were really concerned about commercial driver's licenses. Now, I'm showing my age by saying that, I know, but I wonder if that's still an issue for you guys.
The question was on transportation?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think it's broader than just a distributor issue. It's one of those things that affects us as distributors. I don't know that we distributors are feeling the pressure to find CDL drivers as we were a few years ago. But what's happening on a broader basis is a number of distributors, regardless of the brands they carry, have had issues with inventories because the trucking firms out there are the small truckers are going away. What's happened with the economy is, they had their notes called on their trucks, so they had to. And I'm talking about over-the-road haulers. They had to sell their trucks. The trucks are now, in Mexico or some other country. And I know this from being on the wholesaler advisory panel with Anheuser-Busch. We had a presentation recently from a logistics guy. And so there's the nation is literally hundreds and hundreds of trucks and drivers short. And while the drivers can be put back into play, the trucks aren't available. So there's somewhat of a long-term situation with over-the-road hauling that's affecting all businesses, not just the beer business.
That actually sounds very serious to me, that there is that situation existing, because if this economy is going to pick up and you can't get the goods from one place to the other, that's going to put a real crimp in the recovery.
It really is. And, it could possibly cause the cost of freight to accelerate to the point, where the highest bidder is paying more than the service is worth, but has to have it, and others are left in a worse situation.
Sure.
These are kind of the ripples of a bad economic situation that, unless you're involved, you don't understand. I mean, I only understand that because I happened to be at a wholesaler panel advisory meeting where we had a presentation.
Right. Well, I had not heard that. I fully believe that it's the case, and that there would be the natural result, and it does not surprise me to hear that the banks have called the notes on some of these firms and effectively put them out of business or forced them to dramatically shrink, even while the banks seem to be sitting there with tons of cash cash in the bank at the bank.
Yeah, or, even if you're just a small independent trucker, even if your truck is paid for, the price of fuel is up and the cost of your service is down and nobody's willing to pay, you can't make you're working for free, so you sell your truck to put some money back in your pocket, and just the ripple effect of that, it was pretty interesting to me to understand, well, that's just not a problem we're going to snap our fingers and resolve overnight.
That sounds like a really long-term problem, and I've heard it addressed nowhere in the general media anyway. So that's going to be something to really watch. How is NBWA planning to meet all these challenges?
Well, by continuing to do what we do, we've got a broad involved membership, which is good. You know, unlike I guess some associations that are just representing people. I mean, we're really involved in our members. As you know, those of us in the beer business, we're very involved, we're very passionate, and we're very local. So, it's easy for us to get feedback and find out, you know, what we should be doing. That coupled with our long-range plan, it's not like we're trying to figure out what's the next thing we need to do. We're very planful, we're very focused, and we're working it every day. We've got a tremendous staff back in D.C. that just really, it's fun to see new board members come in, which we just got through with a board meeting last week. It was the first, full board meeting with new members, because they're always amazed at, the staff we have and the qualifications and all the things that our staff is involved with. There's, like a business, there's a lot of moving parts. You don't realize it from the outside looking in, but once you get inside, you realize there's a lot to any organization. We don't have a problem staying busy.
Good. Well, before I open it to questions, in case there are questions, although I think you covered things very well, Larry, I have to tell you, is there any question you wish that I would have asked or anything you think that we should have talked about that we didn't?
No, I think your questions are pretty thorough.
Good. Excellent. So let me open the call to anybody who's on the line, and I know we have several people because I can see by the little dashboard I have in front of me here that we do. If there are any questions out there from anybody or any comments that anybody wants to make that to deal with areas we haven't dealt with or to reinforce something we have dealt with. So if you would like to do that, just press *6 to unmute yourself and chime in. Larry's silence tells me we did a good job today. Thank you.
That's always my feeling when I ask for my employees for questions when they don't ask. Either I did a real good job or I bored them to death and they're just no longer interested.
Well, I prefer thinking about the first choice rather than the second, but you may have it right on the second there. I don't know. So now if people want to know more about Del Papa or about your 100th anniversary, they can go to your website, I guess, which is?
www.delpapabud.com.
www.delpapabud.com. Excellent. And if they want to get a hold of you, they can reach you. I guess you have a contact information there if they don't have the NBWA directory handy so that they can call.
Well, my office number is 409-617-0990, and my assistant is Gay Davidson.
Excellent. Larry,
and I welcome emails, larry.delpapa@delpapabud.com.
Excellent. So everybody now knows how to get a hold of you. Larry, thank you very much for joining us. We promised to get you off by 1 o'clock so you could go to your next thing, and we have
you over-delivered.
And we're grateful that you were able to join us, and thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. We will schedule another Tuesday topic. As I said, this is the first of what I hope will be a series, and we'll let everybody know when that's coming up and what the topic will be. So thank you all very much, and have a very great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Joe.